This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Believe me, if I started murdering people, there'd be none who get left.
We are all evil in some form or another.
I am not guilty.
When Meng Jiyi was born in Xi'an, Hunan Province, China, in 1991, her parents saw her as the embodiment of promise. From the very beginning, she was very curious. She had a very curious mind and a sense of determination that her family believed was going to take her very far in life. Friends remembered her as someone who was studious, very, very kind, and the sort of person who worked hard without needing to be pushed. Education was highly valued in her family, and Meng Jiyi excelled in all of her studies. She was creative as well. She was drawn to music and dance, and they were some outlets that brought her a little bit of balance to an otherwise extremely disciplined life. And by her early 20s, Meng Jiyi had achieved what many in her hometown could only dream of, which was an opportunity to pursue higher education but do it abroad. So she, of course, set her sights on the United States, where she could, of course, have the academic opportunities that she really wanted, but also experience some new cultural things. So in 2012, she came to the University of Missouri in Columbia, which is a college town in the heart of the Midwest. And there she was going for a master's degree in mechanical and aerospace engineering. So she was definitely pretty smart. And in Columbia, Meng Jiyi obviously thrived very academically, but she also built a community of friends who were drawn to her. She was very warm. She was very generous. She loved music, especially piano, and she would play for her friends at gatherings. And her peers remembered her as someone who was very thoughtful and supportive and somebody who would listen to them without judgment, offered her kindness very freely. And though she was, you know, number of miles away from her family in China, she stayed connected with them. She had a number of phone calls all the time, especially with her mother, who was deeply proud of her daughter's achievements. And it was while she was in Missouri that Meng Jiyi met Joseph Dwayne Eldidge, who was another student at the same university. Joseph had been born in Missouri. He was born in Jefferson City in 1991. And unlike Meng Jiyi, who came from a tight-knit, supportive family background, Joseph had come from a little bit more of a modest circumstances. He was intelligent and he had a knack for technology, but he struggled with social connections. And to friends of the two of them, Joseph often came across as a little bit awkward, very introverted, and difficult to get a read on. Still, he and Meng Jiyi were drawn together in 2013. They bonded over their shared classes and then also a love for music and some just mutual companionship. And their relationship moved very quickly. To Meng Jiyi, Joseph was quiet, dependable, somebody who seemed to provide some stability for her while she's in a foreign country. And to Joseph, Meng Jiyi was bright, she was very accomplished, and she was nurturing, which were qualities that he really admired, even if he sometimes seemed a little bit overwhelmed by her ambition and her ease of social interactions. In 2017, they married in Colombia. And at first, the marriage seemed very happy. I mean, photos from those years show the couple. They were smiling together. They celebrated their milestones. And eventually, they welcomed a daughter, Anna, in late 2018. Now, for Mengji, motherhood was a joyous event. She adored her little girl. She would, of course, always send photos and updates to her parents in China. Her mother described her as the happiest that she ever saw her at that time, whenever she was holding Anna. But behind the images of this young family, tensions were kind of simmering. There were some cultural differences, personality clashes, and Joseph's kind of growing controlling behavior began to put a little bit of a strain on the marriage, you could say. Friends of Mengji noticed the shift a little bit, and she seemed less vibrant, a little bit more cautious, as though she was kind of walking on eggshells in her relationship. By 2019, only 2 years into the marriage, the relationship was starting to kind of unravel. There were arguments between them that were growing more frequent, and Joseph had this pattern of jealousy and controlling behavior. He would go through her phone, monitor her communications, always questioning her friendships, and she had confided in some friends that she felt isolated. She was worried about her daughter's future if she continued in the marriage on that path. And at times she talked a little bit about divorce, but she was hesitant about it. She was kind of aware of the stigma that it might bring to her and her culture and the difficulty of raising a child in a foreign country without the support of her extended family. Well, in October of 2019, those tensions kind of reached a bit of a breaking point. On the morning of October 8th, 2019, Mengji's phone suddenly went silent. She stopped responding to her friends and her family in China, wasn't able to get a hold of her. And at first, Joseph was telling people that she had gone out for a walk, heard that one a million times, and then never returned. But almost immediately, the story seemed really strange. Mengji she had no history of disappearing. There was no reason for her to ever abandon her daughter and no pattern of her having these silent periods with her family. And so for her mother, this lack of phone calls was the first immediate red flag. She knew like with a certainty that only us parents can really feel that something was really wrong. And when friends and family noticed Mengji's sudden silence of her phone, Joseph was offering explanations that, again, were strange. Like, he claimed that first that she had gone out for this walk early in the morning on the 9th of October and then never returned. And it was that itself was kind of a flimsy story, especially with her having no history of leaving for long walks even. And if she did, not going without her phone and certainly not telling anyone that she was going out, but more importantly, that she would never abandon her baby.
I think this is her secret love or something, probably.
Back in China?
I suppose. Jerome article talks about this guy, she's like in love with him or something, and that she's not interested in her husband. But that she's married to, she has a baby, so she has to stop like doing this.
Messaging him.
I think, yeah. Yeah. I think there's been about 4 times where she's gone out. And she's been out for like an unreasonably long time. Yeah, pretty much.
1245 case number 10707. Repeating 10707.
So I'll enter as a missing person until we hear otherwise from her. Hear from her or can prove that she went somewhere. Obviously, the best thing for her to do to be to call and say, "Hey, this is where I'm at." You know, for everybody, so everybody knows.
Yeah.
And you guys can try to work out whatever you need to do. But as far as like issues between you and her, is it just, I mean, anything? She just kind of nitpick? Is that kind of the deal or anything?
Yeah, there was no like big, large arguments recently.
Just disagreements about small things.
So her parents in China started to grow frantic when their calls continued to go unanswered. So they talked to some friends of hers that they knew in Missouri, who then contacted the police. And very quickly, Mengji was reported as missing, and they took it seriously. So for detectives, the case was suspicious right from the very beginning. Missing adult cases often take a little bit of time to evaluate, since adults are, of course, legally allowed to disappear on their own. But the circumstances here, I mean, we had a devoted young mother, no history of vanishing, no activity on her phone, and no explanation for her absence that made any sense. So this suggested foul play almost right from the very beginning. And standing, of course, in the center of all this was Joseph Eldridge.
Well, she's a very dedicated person. She's a hard worker, and I really like that. That's important to me. And she's really, she's very, very detail-oriented. And that's something that I honestly didn't see a lot in a lot of people, and really a lot of girls as well. But she was, you know, she's a mechanical engineer with me, or same as I am. And that was something that was pretty important to me, too, because I really kind of always thought that I'd have sort of my own business and maybe have a car shop or something. And I thought that she would be helpful in that. I thought that she would be a part of that. And I told her that whenever we first started dating. And I think that she kind of liked the idea of it. She really likes the idea of working hard and making money. So there was a lot of stuff about her that really made me feel like that she was just a great person to have around. I am surprised. We were kind of growing distant in the past few months, and especially we went to Carthage for an internship over the summer. And, you know, I don't know how she liked that, that small town life very much, but she always kind of stayed inside by herself anyway. And I encouraged her to go outside and meet people and do stuff with Anna and even go out with me whenever I was home. And she just never really wanted to do that kind of stuff, which I don't blame her for it. But I was, you know, that was kind of weird to me that she didn't want to go outside a whole lot.
Oh, that is high.
Do you need batteries?
Oh, no, this is not like a regular like battery type thing.
Okay. So yeah.
We'll be fine.
Okay. So that stuff is very weird to me. I know she was talking to somebody else on the side, and I didn't know that until after she had left. But, you know, whatever she's doing, I just hope she's safe. And I really hope that she can, you know, find herself and come back to me and Anna, and we can just have a big long talk, and that's all we need. But we can work things out. I think she's just confused and maybe scared, and I don't know if she felt alone, but I just really want her to come back. And it does worry me that she doesn't have any of that stuff. I just hope that she's safe. I hope that she's with, at least with somebody who cares for her, you know, enough to keep her safe. And if she's watching, I want her to know that I love her and that Anna loves her too. Anna needs to see her mom. She really needs to see her mom. And Anna's growing up really well, and she's learning to wave and she's learning to talk. So I think she'd be really happy if she came back here. And I can try and be a better husband. I don't know if I didn't talk enough to her, give her enough hugs or what, but I'll give her 10 times as much as what I did before. So.
When Mengqi was reported missing in October of 2019, the police, they, of course, wasted no time, and they focused on the husband, Joseph Eldridge. And the circumstances they considered were just way too suspicious. Mengqi, again, she's a devoted mother, she's got this baby, no history of disappearing or any mental illness, no sudden desire to leave her entire life behind, no family in the United States that she's going to run away to. Now, on the other hand, Joseph's story that she'd gone out for this walk and just never returned, I mean, I think even the most basic scrutiny could collapse that story. So investigators noted that there was some inconsistencies, that he had told them that he had last seen Mengqi at home, but he couldn't pinpoint when exactly she had left.
She had told me, I know, during that time, she had told me that she had to get up early in the morning to go somewhere, and I'd asked her where she's going and who she's meeting. And I asked her about three times who she meeting. And her answer was just, quote, me. So she wouldn't tell me who she was meeting or where she was going, what she was doing. And then later in the night, about 5 a.m., is when I woke up to Anna crying. And she was crying really loud. And so I really sat up in bed. And then I normally put my hand over to where Mushy is. But I put my hand over there and she wasn't there. And I looked over and I didn't see her. And I looked around the room and I didn't see her. So I went out of the room and I searched the rest of the apartment for Munchie and I just didn't see her anywhere. I noticed that her keys were here. I noticed that her phone and her ring were next to the bed. It was already, I was really tired, so I just went back to sleep.
And he didn't report her missing himself. It was actually friends and the family who had raised the alarm on that. So when detectives pressed him, his effect on this whole thing was flat, like almost really clinical the way he talked about it. He wasn't frantic, no panic of him. I mean, your wife has just vanished and you're not worried about it. So these were red flags that were troubling to them.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Ming Chi was smart, and she had started recording things on her phone.
I don't like being married to you. I don't like living with you. I want to divorce you, okay? I want that to happen during this semester. I want it to happen soon. Sooner, better, okay?
You find all those stories about men and or women, other spouse, killed them, whatever, because you aren't trying to live peacefully with me. You want me to hurt somebody?
You know what? Next time you dig a hole, I'm just gonna let you jump in, and I'm gonna bury the dirt over you.
Do I just smack her? Do I just beat her down?
You want it to?
I have that craving. I'll admit that.
You can't.
I'm not going to though.
There.
You'll probably get deported, and it's mine. So I don't know. Are you gonna play nice? Are you gonna try and play good? Obviously, I'm not gonna represent you to stay in America anymore. But Anna's not leaving America. I can't tell you that.
And his vehicle data, that in the days after Mengqi had disappeared, he had taken some long drives into some remote areas of central Missouri.
I got to relax now at the same time. Wait a minute. You got to relax. Your wife is missing. You're now the sole caregiver of a one-year-old child. And you went on a relaxing drive? I got to tell you, that strikes me as strange, and I don't think I'm alone in that. I think Alan here would probably agree with that. I think 99 out of 100 people on the street would say, that's not the time to relax. I mean, you haven't even told anybody, I don't know where my wife is.
Yeah.
I'm asking you to look at this from my standpoint, right?
Yeah.
Because I have a job to do. My job is to find Menchie, right?
I understand. Yep.
For good or for bad, it's to find her.
Sorry.
If she left on her own and she wants to stay gone, that's her right. But boy, if she didn't, we got a whole different situation, doesn't we? If somebody did something to her, or if she accidentally did something to herself,
yeah,
we absolutely cannot stop until we find her. You understand that, right?
Yeah. I want to help you guys as much as I can.
And I will not apologize for doing my job and asking difficult questions. You understand that too, right?
Yeah.
Did you kill your wife?
No, I did not.
Do you know what happened to her?
No, I do not.
And these trips, sometimes stretching about 100 miles, were kind of unexplained by him. He wasn't visiting family or friends, and he wasn't going anywhere that was connected with what he was doing for work. So it appeared to investigators that he was maybe scouting for places to dispose of a body. Meanwhile, Ming Chi's parents, who were in China, were completely desperate. They were not able to fly to the U.S. right away. They had to rely on friends and investigators for any updates that they could get. They knew their daughter would never abandon them without any word. So for her mother, the silence was just unbearable. And she described it later as, quote, a darkness that never lifted, end quote. Now, Joseph, he tried to maintain some appearances. He gave interviews where he insisted that Mengqi had left voluntarily, even suggesting that there were some cultural pressures or depression might have played a role in it. But his attempts at this kind of stuff only really made him look more suspicious. he seemed a little bit more concerned with protecting himself than with finding his wife.
Did you lock your door when you left the apartment?
Yeah.
If she comes home, how's she gonna get back in? You've got her keys and her car, her phones in the house. She can't even call anybody.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, did you leave her a note? You didn't leave her a note. No, I'm just saying, hey, don't worry about Anna and me because we're out for a drive. Didn't do that, right?
I didn't.
Why not?
I didn't think about it.
You knew she wasn't coming back, right?
I didn't know. Honestly, I just thought that she left on her own accord and I didn't know where she might be.
And you go driving around through the wilderness to conclude after dark. But you say that you're wanting to relax. But when I hear that, I hear that somebody has a lot of anxiety about something that's just happened. A lot of it. That you cannot sit there in your apartment for another minute because you're going out of your mind. That's what it looks like to me. Does that make sense to you?
Am I the raven? No, I'm a guide, but...
So how do we explain that, Joe? I mean...
Muncie and I have been really distant the past couple months. That I really didn't think a lot about it, that she left like that. She's been acting weird recently, and she wouldn't tell me where she's been. I am really confused about all this.
So in November of 2019, so a month after Meng Qi's disappearance, the investigators decide that they really shouldn't wait any longer. Like, they didn't yet have a body or anything to conclusively say that she was dead, but they believed they had enough circumstantial evidence to at least arrest Joseph. So they charged him initially with child abuse and endangerment, saying that he had created emotional mistreatment of this baby Anna that had surfaced during this investigation. And these charges ensured at least that Joseph would remain in custody while the detectives could try and build this murder case. So, of course, the arrest made a number of headlines across Missouri, and friends of Meng Qi held their vigils, organized searches, just hoping against hope that she might still be alive. But behind closed doors, the police were pretty convinced she was dead and that Joseph knew exactly where her body was. Now, the search for Meng Qi's remains stretched out for over a year. The police were looking in all wooded areas, rural back roads, and stretches of the Lamine River in Cooper County. They used drones, cadaver dogs, divers, and they were often guided by some GPS data that was from Joseph's car. But despite a number of different searches, nothing just turned up. The lack of a body really complicated the prosecution's case. So while they had Joseph's suspicious behavior, his lies, and his controlling history, jurors often really kind of want physical proof of a death in their murder trials. So they knew that they needed to find her. And finally, in March of 2021, so more than 17 months after she vanished, they had a bit of a breakthrough. There was a hiker near Rockbridge Memorial State Park that discovered human remains along a remote section of the Lamine River, and forensic testing confirmed the worst, that it was Meng Qi Yi. Her body was badly decomposed, but the discovery was critical. It at least gave the prosecutors the evidence that they needed to move forward with a murder charge against Joseph, because clearly she was in fact dead. So in April of 2021, a grand jury indicted Joseph Eldridge for the first degree murder of Meng Qi. Prosecutors alleged that he had killed Meng Qi during a domestic argument and then driven her body to this remote location and then dumped it in the river. They argued that the long drives that he had taken in the days after her disappearance were proof that he was trying to cover it up. And his regular demeanor made it clear that he had really no interest in finding her alive. So the stage was then set for a trial that would capture some national attention, pitting Joseph's shifting explanations against the reality of what had been his wife's fate. By the time that Joseph Elledge went to trial in the fall of 2021, the case had really gone kind of international and people were really interested in the case. And to people in Colombia, it was a shocking crime to have in their own backyard. And to observers that were watching in China, it was the heartbreaking story of a daughter who had left home to build this new life only to be killed by a man that she was supposed to have trusted the most.
Molly, the prosecution presented Elledge's 51-page journal, which he titled Grievances, that was found on his phone, and each entry in that journal was documented by both a date and time. The prosecution had Columbia Police Department investigator Jeff Adams read out part of Elledge's grievance journal yesterday, where he wrote about divorce help information and issues between him and Meng Shiji. Adams read out parts of the journal where Elledge called Ji selfish, impatient, and toxic. Elledge also documents that he believed Ji was trying to gaslight and manipulate him into thinking that he was a bad person and that all she cared about was teaching their daughter how to speak Chinese.
Now, what had actually happened is by the fall of 2019, the cracks in Joseph and Meng Qi's marriage had widened into actual fissures. What once seemed like just some cultural differences, some minor disagreements, now were pretty deep incompatibilities. And to those that were closest to Meng Qi, it was pretty clear that she felt really trapped. And friends would later testify at trial that Joseph was controlling, not in loud, violent ways that, you know, you would immediately think with domestic violence, but in those quiet, insidious patterns that eroded her confidence. He was frequently checking her phone. He criticized her all the time and, of course, accused her of infidelity. At times, he would withdraw his affection or give her the silent treatment, which is kind of a form of psychological punishment. And he really didn't like the fact that she was reaching out to her friends for emotional support. Like, he really resented any kind of independence that she had, this coercive control he was trying to hold over her. Now, Meng Qi, meanwhile, had begun to imagine a life now beyond her marriage. She had confided in at least one friend that she was considering leaving him. But she was, of course, worried how that decision would affect her daughter, Anna, who was only about a year old at that time. And she also felt a little bit conflicted about the cultural stigma that can be attached to divorce and raising a child alone in the U.S., you know, far away from her parents in China who could have helped her and supported her. Still, the thought of leaving was becoming less and less of this abstract idea and a little bit more of a plan. And in the months leading up to her disappearance, Meng Qi began journaling about her unhappiness. And investigators had later discovered some entries where she described Joseph as emotionally abusive. And she wrote about her feelings of loneliness and how he had belittled her at times and how she was kind of afraid for her future if things didn't change. And these private writings, combined with the conversations that she was having with some friends, were starting to paint a picture of a woman who was quietly, slowly gathering the strength to leave the relationship. On the evening of October 8th, 2019, Joseph and Meng Qi had argued. Now, the neighbors didn't hear any loud fights or see anything going on outside. There was nothing that would raise alarm bells at the time, but Joseph later admitted to the police that the argument had turned physical. Now, he claimed that Meng Qi had been nagging him and that he had lost his temper.
Was it just happening in the blink of an eye?
It was just happening.
And when she was hit on the counter and she came at you again, what was your reaction then?
I pushed her again.
Hard?
Hard.
What happened
then? Probably even harder. She fell down.
Your hair hit anything?
She fell. She fell in the kitchen and her head hit with a big thud. I felt it.
His version of events kind of shifted over time, but the investigators were able to kind of piece together what had they think had really happened. So during that fight, Manchi had been fatally injured, probably either hit over the head or strangled. And they believe strangled. This sudden act of violence that had ended her life, of course, in her home while her daughter was asleep in the next room. So Joseph then, of course, had this problem of, what do I do with this body? So instead of calling for help or alerting the authorities, he quickly covered up what had happened by taking Anna to some relatives to take care of, drove out to rural Missouri to scout some locations. He, of course, took multiple trips following her death, looking for some remote place that he could hide her body. The trial opened in November of 2021 in Boone County. The prosecutors, of course, laid out their case that she had confided in friends about her unhappiness and fear in her marriage, that she had written in her journal that he was emotionally abusive towards her, and that she had been making plans that pointed towards that she was going to be leaving, like, and even considering divorce. They had argued on October 8th, 2019, that argument had escalated into violence. Joseph had strangled Mengqi and then desperately tried to erase the evidence by hiding her body. They used these suspicious drives as a way of, like, scouting those locations that had been from data that was retrieved from his phone and from his car, which coincided with locations where her remains were eventually found. Most compelling, of course, was his behavior after she had vanished, that he didn't act like a husband that was really worried about her. Instead, he seemed a little bit more preoccupied with covering for himself, concocting these explanations that continued to change over time. He portrayed Mengqi as depressed, even unreliable, in an effort to suggest that she might have left voluntarily, which was stupid because she would never do that, and her friends knew it. Now, the defense team, they admitted that he and Mengqi had had this troubled marriage, and that they had had arguments, and that there might have been some emotional mistreatment, but they said, no, he never murdered her. They had argued that Mengqi's death had been an accident, or maybe the result of Joseph's recklessness rather than an intentional homicide. They said that there was really a lack of forensic evidence because Mengqi's body had been so badly decomposed that no medical examiner could really pinpoint the exact cause of her death. So there was no clear evidence that she had been strangled. There was no definitive sign of any trauma to her body. So without that, like, how could they possibly prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Joseph had deliberately killed her? And after deliberating, the jury reached a decision on November 10th, 2021, that they did not convict Joseph of first-degree murder, which does require the proof of premeditation. So instead, they found him guilty of second-degree murder and abuse of a corpse.
Joseph Elledge, as you say, Deborah, not only charged but convicted of second-degree murder for the death of his wife, Mengqi Ji, in 2019. Just minutes ago, after about 7 hours of deliberation, Deborah, the jury came to that unanimous decision. Now, second-degree murder essentially means that he knowingly caused the death of Mengqi Ji. A big part of this case has been whether he deliberated on it. So this isn't exactly the conviction that prosecutors were asking for, who wanted first-degree murder, that he deliberated on it. But instead, the jury saying, going with a lesser charge, that he knowingly caused the death of Mengqi Ji. This will now lead into the next phase of the trial, the penalty phase, where the jury will consider what sentence they'll recommend for him.
And Judge Brock Jacobs sentenced him to 28 years in prison. It was 22 years for the murder and then 6 years for abuse of a corpse. So that was to be served consecutively. And at the sentencing, the judge had actually remarked on his lack of remorse that he'd shown and the devastating impact that had happened on Mengqi's family in China and their own young daughter, Anna, who was now going to grow up without their mother and their father in prison. So for Meng Chi's parents, the verdict at least brought some closure, but it wasn't peace at all. They had fought from across the world pretty much for justice. They had filed some civil suits to ensure that their granddaughter was not going to be raised under Joseph in any way, shape, or form. And in statements, they had described their daughter as bright and talented and a loving woman whose life had been stolen too soon. I just cannot imagine the pain for them. So Joseph, who's now in his early 30s, was transferred to a Missouri state prison. He has maintained some variation of his defense. He still admits to arguments and just basically unhappiness in the marriage, but he has denied intentionally murdering her. His appeals have kind of continued to be ongoing, but there are legal experts that expect that his conviction is not going to be overturned.
Back in November, a jury found Joseph Elledge guilty of second-degree murder in the death of his wife, Meng Shiji, and was sentenced to 28 years in prison. On the first day of the trial, he admitted to killing Meng Shiji, but said it was an accident from him pushing her, her hitting her head, and suffering a subdural hematoma in her sleep. The state argued Elledge killed Meng Shiji in cold blood because she was having an affair. His new appeal says the state failed to prove or present any proof of Meng Shiji's cause or manner of death, and the state failed to prove Elledge killed her in sudden passion or with deliberation. Due to the decomposition of Ji's body when it was found, medical examiners were unable to provide a cause of death. The state said, due to a missing neck bone in Ji's remains, they believe Elledge strangled her. Now, the court documents, the appeal does go over hours of audio recordings that we heard in court of Elledge verbally abusing G. It also does mention that Elledge did know G was killed and did know how she was killed, but says that he did not plan to kill her.
Deborah, Elledge is already spending 28 years in prison for the murder of his wife, Meng Shiji. And we learned today that Elledge will spend another 10 years on top of that and will avoid more charges by taking this plea. Joseph Elledge is in a Fulton prison, but he came back to Boone County today to put an end to a child abuse case against him. He pleaded guilty today to child abuse, endangering the child, and domestic assault. Prosecutors first charged him with this in 2019 as police investigated the disappearance of his wife, Meng Shiji. Police say they found bruises on he and G's child's legs, which they claim came from Elledge. Elledge's attorneys say he did pinch their child to try and make her stop crying. He'll now serve 10 more years in prison for that plea. He'll serve them consecutively to the 28 years in prison he's serving for the murder of Ji.
Now, Meng Chi's murder did highlight some critical issues, and that's about coercive control and how dangerous that can be and how it can escalate into lethal violence. It also highlighted the vulnerability of immigrant women that don't have their families for their support systems. And overall, it was kind of a wake-up call about intimate partner violence. And for Meng Chi's family, her story is a tragedy, but it was also a testament to, you know, a young woman who had come to the U.S. with this hope and ambition. Today, Anna is being raised away from her father, thankfully, in the care of a family who can give her some stability. I do not know if that is in the U.S. or in China. She will grow up with the truth of what happened to her mom. Her grandparents in China will hope that she will take that as a bit of a lesson in her own relationships. As for Joseph, he is still sitting in prison. He's serving a sentence that will keep him locked up for most of his life. His name is ever going to be forever tied to this murder where he silenced his wife and deprived his daughter of their mother. And that was the murder of Meng Chi Yi. And I think it's a terrible case. It's an all too familiar case, which I'm getting a little tired of telling these same stories where wife disappears, the husband says she went out for a walk, never came back, and usually it turns out that she was talking about leaving, and sure enough, he couldn't have that. And I don't think it just happens with men against women. I think there are women that do it as well to men, but I'm just getting tired of these stories. But their names need to be out there and their stories deserve to be told, so I'm going to keep telling them. And I'm going to be back again in a couple of weeks with probably another similar familiar case of terrible and awful that people do to each other. And in the meantime, if you want to do your thing, and I will see you again next week. As always, thank you so much for listening.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.